Hello and welcome to this week's Comic Roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. I am here with Brian. You can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. We are here with Chris. You can find on Twitter at SkateXEdge. And we are here with Damian. You can find on Twitter at Damian Johnston. Our number one for the week is Four Eyes, Hearts of Fire by Joe Kelly, Max Fumara, and Thomas Maurer. Brian totally didn't change those on the script. I'm surprised that I was good enough to check the book. Nailed it. Our over-under for the week is Bands on Discord Records. For all you people who don't know what that is, that's probably going to go really long, so enjoy that. Let's see. Oh, yeah. So, I'm assuming, since it's technically Monday and you're all listening to this, I'm assuming we all saw Deadpool this weekend, so don't forget to go to reviewandroast.com and check out our review. And probably...
No, I was going to go with you guys on Saturday, but you turds have to go to a wedding.
Duh. That's why I'm going tomorrow, so nailed it. And...
No, I'm not going to go see it now.
No one wants you to see it, actually, because all you do is hate on superhero movies. You don't even see them, and you think they're all terrible, so...
I like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, it's because I made you watch it, and you're like, oh my god, that was the best thing that ever happened in my life.
Scott, please rub my ass.
He did say that, too. That's not a lie. And I did proceed to rub the dumper. So.
What the fuck did I walk
what
into?
You can get.
I have no idea. Welcome.
Sorry, I had a cold. I had to blow my nose. Sorry, I should have hit mute.
What? Yeah, is anyone else reading Batman Europa besides myself and or Brian?
I just got number 4 and I haven't finished it yet, but I've read the first 3.
I didn't know 4 was out, or did I get 4? I think I got 4.
I don't pay attention to what you do.
Well, I just read 3. Is anyone else reading that?
Mm-mm.
I totally didn't wait for an answer before I started talking again, so nailed it. I won't go into too much detail, but there are definitely things I like about it and things that I'm like, I don't know about that. But it is a 4-issue series. You might want to, check it out. It's definitely worth checking out. But that's really about all that I've read that really kind of stuck out a little bit for me this week. So I guess here we'll pass it to Brian.
Woo. All right. Has anyone read any of the Casanova stuff from Matt Fraction?
No.
No, I have not.
Nailed it.
I've been curious since I first saw it, but I'm kind of iffy on Matt Fraction because I like Sex Criminals an awful lot, and I like Hawkeye an awful lot, but I hated Satellite Sam, and there was another thing Odyssey. Odyssey was just, wow.
Yeah, I did one issue then. I said, done.
I think I did 3. This thing is just... I don't know what to make of it. It's like a weird multi-dimensional James Bond with sex robots, if that's the lamest way I could put it. I just wonder if anyone else read it, because I don't know what to make of it. It's so... I don't know. Maybe I'm just not reading it right. I don't know. I think Matt Fraction's too cool for the rest of us.
I'm trying to think of what else he's done that's kind of weird.
Oh, no, because Sex Criminals is totally normal.
Yeah, I just finished the second trade of that. It's good.
Hey, me
yeah,
too.
Sex Criminals is actually awesome.
About a month ago, I finished the second trade. Look at that. We're on the same page.
It's nice.
But I've never read Casanova.
I don't know that I can recommend it, truthfully. I mean, it's weird. It's definitely weird. That's all I can really tell you.
A lot of his stuff is all perverted.
This one's not really perverted in a way, though. It's just weird. I don't know how to explain it.
Well, all right then. Why don't Chris try to...
Is that all you read?
Sherlock Holmes.
All right. Well, there you go.
Yeah, moving on.
All right, well, I actually read a ton of stuff.
Good.
All right, I'm going to go take a bath. Let me know when you're done.
All right, cool. I finished Cognetic. You guys finished that already, right?
Like 2 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't that like stop like 2 months ago?
Yeah.
Dude, 2 years ago. Which one was that? Which? I'm trying to remember what happened at the end. I don't even remember.
I'm so embarrassed for us right now.
Why?
Why shouldn't I be?
Why should you be?
Because he was eating donuts in the microphone 5 seconds ago. That's why. So, okay. So, what did you think then?
It was fine. It just. I know there's going to be a third arc. So. But I mean, that one just kind of just ended abruptly. It just kind of like, you know, kind of left you there hanging. Like one of her other siblings goes, "What do you think? Like, you think your brother was just gonna like put all of himself into, you know, right here at this moment? You didn't think that he had like his mind like stashed away elsewhere?" And so like you see him, he's like, I guess he's like walking through England, like amassing his, you know, his hive mind.
I want a hive mind.
You know what I'm saying? Like he would just they could like control people like multiple, you know, like you know, on the thousand scale. So I mean, it's cool. It's like oh, okay, and it just kind of like ends like that. I'm like, oh, that's.
Yeah, I mean, I remember liking it, but I remember liking Mimetic better.
I'm like, three parts, okay, and like, really, you're just gonna end it like that? He's not dead, okay? That's. Great way to end.
Yeah, that's how you guarantee a sequel.
And I finished Tet finally. I was catching up. Like I had like a pile of stuff that I was getting caught up on.
Now, how was that? Because that was, I remember we did the number one, and I kind of liked it, but I never went any farther.
It's depressing.
Oh, I probably don't need any more of that in my life then.
It's totally that Vietnam War veteran kind of depressing.
I can totally relate. I mean, I still have bad dreams
and then
from Vietnam.
The real mind fuck that I had this week was catching up on Providence, which I am caught up on. And that's by Alan Moore, so I don't think I need to say any more, really. But that thing is just – it's cool. The story's cool. There's a lot of plot twists, and it's definitely kept me interested, but it's like – it's just, you know, I told Brian a little bit about it. I told Damien a little bit about it. I was like, I could have done without the incest and the rape of the 13-year-old girl, but.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I probably didn't need to hear that.
Well, they didn't show it.
Well,
it's a bold stance.
Well, I guess in defense of it, what it is like, just not to give away anything, but at the time of when it happens, it's. She's initiating it, so
they're never mind.
She's like possessed by like some kind of like demon or something. But then it switches over to the other guy, and he's possessed now, and she's like back to normal, and she's like, you know, it's just weird. Okay, I'll just tell you that. That's really weird, but it's cool. It's weird. I mean, but yeah, I could have done without that part. I don't really care to see it in any kind of form. Comic or movie or anything. And what else did I? Oh, Lock and Key, because Brian went and posted that thing up of his, you know, artist each day, Gabriel Rodriguez, and I'm like, Lock and Key. I'm like, what's this? So I like go and look it up, and I start looking up a little bit about it. And I'm like, oh, dude. I'm like, Stephen King's son wrote this, and I'm like, what's this thing about? And I'm like, what the hell? And I told Brian, I'm like, dude, how the hell did this thing fly under my radar?
You've never read Lock and Key?
No.
Well,
yeah,
I mean,
it's
pretty new. I mean, they only got like eight hardcovers out. Yeah, I know. I was being funny. No.
So you read it too?
I read the first couple. I mean, I haven't finished it, but I've had.
Oh, no, dude, I went and bought them all.
I don't blame you. It's so good from what I've read so far.
That guy's artwork is fucking phenomenal.
Thank you. That was me.
Nice.
But, yeah, so I started looking into it, what it's about and everything, and I went and I was looking on eBay because I was trying to find the back issues and everything, and I'm like, dude, I'm like, some of the prices that people are actually asking for are, like, they're kind of up there. I'm like, fuck, man. I'm like, what's up with this book? And then find out, like, it's going to be a show, and then Brian told me, he's like, no, it's not.
You, like working in the kitchen at, like, Al's Diner or something over there?
Who, me?
Yeah.
That's me. Sorry, I had it on mute. I had it on mute when the pizza guy came, but I forgot to turn it off when I was grabbing silver.
I'm used to it being Chris. Damn it. All right, you're off the hook this time, Chris.
So I got the first issue, and I read that. That thing's rad. That thing is really freaking good.
I agree. I'm pretty pumped.
It makes a lot of I guess this is another thing I'm going to have to do is I know who H.P. Lovecraft is. Have I read any of his work? No. So when people, you know, like what comics they're talking, it's got that Lovecraftian kind of feel. I don't know what the hell they're talking about. So apparently that does. And so does Providence, but I don't, you know, but yeah, Lock and Key is the one issue was really freaking good.
I'm pretty pumped that you started it. I'm actually makes me want to start pick it back up now, so thank you for that.
I always go on stuff that you guys
recommend.
Besides the superhero stuff, everything else I would say you, Brian, and I are pretty much into.
For the most part, yeah. I mean, there's a handful of things. Yeah. But
since I've been talking to Damien and stuff, he's actually into the same stuff. So. But yeah, that's a really good first issue, and the artwork is just it's a good story so far, good artwork. I'm super bummed that it totally flew under my radar. I told Brian, I'm like, dude, why didn't you ever say anything? I talk about it all the time. I'm like, bull crap, you do. You've never mentioned it once.
So what'd you think of the artwork?
It's fucking awesome. And I know you're being an asshole right now, so but I'm still going to say it. It is.
I agree.
His artwork is fucking top notch, dude.
Yeah, it's good stuff, man. Really good stuff.
And what else did I read?
Holy crap, you going all the way back to first grade with this?
What?
I read Hop on Pop in second grade.
Hooked on Phonics was the best.
Shut up. Oh, and A Train Called Love. I like that one by Garth Ennis. You guys haven't read it, but whatever.
How do you know?
Because I know you haven't.
No, I totally didn't.
All right, Damien, go.
Let's see. I did not pick up much. I got the number one, and I got two anthology comics this week. I got The New Island. The most recent Island and something called Amazing Forest. I think it's on IDW.
I saw that.
Ooh, how is that?
I asked him too because it looks the covers look cool.
Yeah, the cover art's great.
That's what first grabbed my attention.
Yeah, totally. It's awesome cover. There are four stories written by two different people. There's Eric Freitas and Ulysses Farinas. Both of them have
awesome names.
Yeah. their first names are strange, like as strangely spelled as you can spell those two names too. Like I've never seen it written that way. But so it's four stories drawn by four different artists, written by them. I'm not sure. I can't remember who did who. The first story and the last one are really awesome for as far as the art goes for two totally different reasons. The first one, I can't remember who did the art, but it's just awesome. It kind of reminds me of I can't remember the guy's name. Anyway, it's nicely done. Very, very contemporary, nice stuff. The last one is done by this girl, Yumi Sekugawa, and she has I heard her because she has a comic called Ikebana, which is on that Retrofit Comics, which I really liked.
Oh, okay.
She really, really kind of cool art style. And those are both great. The middle two, the stories are awesome. Just the art really wasn't doing it for me on the two middle stories. I was the first one's the second story is called Wolf Mother, which is kind of awesome, but it's the art just I don't know, it didn't really work for me. And the second one's called Ronnie the Robot, and similar kind of issue. It's not bad or anything. It just isn't really not my thing. But it's great. It's certainly worth checking out. I mean, the stories themselves, the actual narratives are quite good. I just had some critiques there. And then The New Island is good. The first story and the cover is like a furry story. And
into it.
Those weird me out, that whole animal people sexualized culture.
Brian's like obsessed with them.
No, not bestiality, because they're all animals.
Okay, I get what you're saying.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna lie. If I met a woman and I really liked her and she told me she was a furry, I'd probably just marry her right there.
Right on.
Not saying that I would get into it, but I'd be like, yeah, she's.
Oh, he would totally get into it.
I'd be like,
I might get into it.
What, you have a really big bush down there, or?
Yeah.
There is accessories that go along with the kink, but it's strange to me. Cool. I mean, but I applaud people doing it. But the story itself is really, it's quite nice. It's drawn awesome. Whoever the artist is super good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Just stop doing that.
I'm trying to keep the little microphone here from rubbing against anything. I don't know if that's me. That's not me. I don't know what that was.
No, that's not
Chris
you.
Is the one brushing his teeth.
Yeah, he does it every week.
I'm not doing anything right now. It's completely...
but yeah, the island's great. I mean, everything in it's awesome. It's just, you know, I'm really digging that anthology.
Yeah,
the guy who edits that is super, seems like a super cool guy too. He's very active on Twitter, if you guys follow that guy.
Who?
I think Duncan something. I'll remember in a second.
Yeah, a few months back we did, I forget exactly which issue, but we did an issue of the island.
The first one.
Was it the first
one?
Yeah, it went over. It was a big hit on the Comic Roast.
Not for me, it wasn't. But.
There were some stories that were really good, and then, like you said, others that were like, that's a little too weird for me.
Well, it's like a fanzine.
Yeah, I don't know. I really dug the one I read, but sometimes it's just a little hard to spring for the price tag, because I'm super poor.
Yeah. Oh, Brandon Graham is his name. I think he's the guy who edits.
Okay.
I think he worked on Prophet and some stuff like that.
I've heard that's good. I've not read it yet, though.
Well, all right, then. Yeah. I guess number one time?
Sure.
If you want to call it a number one, sure.
Well, I mean, it's a number one, so...
Yeah.
Well,
all right, so
it's not. But.
It's really more Image's choice.
Four Eyes, Hearts of Fire on Image. This was my pick for the week. I didn't really have a reason. I just kind of was thumbing through it, and I thought the artwork looked awesome. So I was like, let's give this a whirl. And to be honest, it's the story. It follows this boy who, for some reason, in the first 2.5 pages, is working as like almost like a water boy or whatever in like a office environment in 1920s. And the next thing you know, 6 months later, he's like on a farm with a dragon. Or
I think that's two different kids you're talking about.
No,
there.
I don't think so. I took it to be that's the same kid. It could be two different ones, but I don't think it is. Because if it is, there's absolutely no point. If it's different kids, there's no point to the first part of the story with the whole office. But either way, it's basically Depression era with dragons, and this kid's like, got a 3-month-old dragon that seems to be blind, but they're going to start training him to fight anyway, and I don't know. I don't know what else to say about it, because the artwork is awesome, but other than that, I pretty much was not into it, so if somebody has a better explanation, by all means, take it away.
I don't, but I will concur. The artwork is super good. Like, I picked up the store today and just kind of flipped through it real quick, and I was like, oh, I'd probably buy this regardless, even though I'd never heard of it.
Right.
I didn't realize this is I hadn't read the original story arc of this. I didn't know there was another one before this.
I had no clue either.
Yeah, I didn't know, but I did not expect. I actually, it's one of those things. I flipped through it, but I somehow managed in flipping through it not to see any of the dragons.
I know, right?
So then when I sat down and I read, when I got to the dragon page, I was like, wait, what the hell is this? But yeah, art is great. You know, really nicely stylized. People look cool. They're all, they have that thing where they're a little like off model here and there. Like their faces change depending on situations. It's just but really well drawn. I don't fully understand what's happening in it.
Right.
I actually did. I did take it that those are two different kids, because the first kid's black, I think. Yeah, and the other kid's like Italian. But I mean, why? I don't know what's happening. I mean, I thought maybe if the previous arc would explain some of those characters and it would mean more. I mean, is this like starting off Empire Strikes Back and being like, who's that? What's that? What's the Force? Like, I mean, like for the first time, or is it not? Are these totally brand new characters? I have no idea. So. I should have done maybe a little more homework, but I did not have time. So.
You know what? I don't know why I didn't realize that. I don't know why I thought it was the same kid, but now that you mention it, I look back. Yeah, that's absolutely. Which makes it even less sense. Like, why is that first three pages even in the book? Because no idea. Those characters have nothing to do with the rest of the story.
Right. Yeah, and the settings are kind of weird. Like, when you first meet the dragon, they're on a farm, and it looks like Dust Bowl era. And like a few pages later, they're in the Bronx, like driving a truck.
Right.
And I mean, that could be.
Well, it takes place during the Depression, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the farm is very nondescript. It could be, you know, outside of Albany.
Well, you pretty much hit it right there with the Dust Bowl era. I mean, that's.
Yeah, I guess it's just totally that's what I took from it. And I'm not saying that that was a correct assumption to make. I just. It looks like that's what it looks like. It looks like, you know, the comics, like, takes place in the early 30s, late 20s, or whatever. And it's like the Depression. And you have New York City at the beginning, or maybe Chicago even. I can't remember.
Yeah.
That, but then,
and then Chicago, and then like flips to New York, and
right. And I guess I'm losing track of time a little bit. Like, were they in the Midwest and they like packed up their dragon and drove cross country? Like, I don't know. I mean, all these details are kind of important because it changes, like, you know, how much stake characters have in certain things, like. If this is like down the street from where their farm is, and if they're just like, if this farm is in New Jersey, isn't a huge commitment. But if they're driving from, you know, outside of Indianapolis or something, that's a huge deal. So that's kind of stuff I'd like to know, but I was not able to learn it.
It's almost like the movie How to Train Your Dragon, but in the Depression era instead of Viking times.
That would be the elevator pitch for that, I'm sure.
Nailed it. You know what else I didn't quite, okay, so the kid's on the farm with the old guy, and he's like, I want to start training my dragon to fight. And he's like, well, the dragon ain't ready. And then he takes him to some, like, back alley, almost like who you would picture, like, dog fights or cock fights. And it's just a bunch of old dudes, like, training dragons by, like, you know, whipping the shit out of them and yelling at them. And is this what you want to put that dragon through? No, sensei. And it's like, all right, let's go back, wax on, wax off, like. I don't know. It was very much weird, in my opinion. Like, it did, I don't know. And I'm not saying that, like, I needed more context, but, like, I kind of needed more context. Like, I have no idea.
Well, yeah, if we would have had the first arc, if we would have known the first arc, then probably would have helped.
But well, I mean.
I didn't know until, like.
You would expect maybe at least a little bit of a backstory, I guess, because I mean, you got to figure people are going to pick this off the shelf, going, "Ooh, a number one, let's jump
on
board."
Should have, because like the last time, the first arc came out in 2010, so I mean, come on.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Oh, then yeah, they definitely should have given a little more info.
Been, you know, what things been on the fucking back burner for how long now?
Like, I feel like I should read the entire first arc before I even begin to try and review this one, but like that's not gonna happen.
Know you didn't know, so whatever.
Brian's been awfully quiet though.
Yeah, I might put my number on hold until I read the first one. I almost feel like I owe it to the writer of this book to read the first one before I say it,
right?
An absolute thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, maybe
it's how to train your dragon meets Pan's Labyrinth.
I mean, I know maybe it is like walking into a trilogy in the beginning of the second movie and being like, you know, this doesn't make any sense, and blaming the movie. I mean,
right.
I knew a girl that when I was younger, like, had not seen Star Wars, but she saw Empire Strikes Back, and I'm going to be like it. She goes, eh, it's weird. I don't really get it. It's like, fucking, of course you didn't get it. So, I don't know. It's, the art is fantastic. I'm going to reserve judgment until I see the rest, but if we do want to do numbers, I think I have a potential justification for what I'll say.
I can agree with that one, but we'll let Captain Silence over here say something.
I'm just letting you guys hash out your thoughts. I don't disagree with pretty much anything anyone said. The first three or four pages that took place in Chicago I thought were pretty good. The, you know, interesting start. Being from Chicago, anything like that should at least make me go, ah, and it did. Then they go to the farm, and there's a dragon, and I'm like, what? And that was pretty much, like, it lost me immediately.
Yeah.
And I was like, I love the artwork. The first three or four pages were great, and it was it wasn't even like a gradual decrescendo down. It was a straight drop off a cliff into a... I have no idea.
It was like two different stories.
Piling a big...
No, I'm
pile of garbage.
It felt like three stories all smashed together kind of helplessly, and I just didn't really... It just did... It never resonated with me beyond the very beginning. Like, when I saw the guy falling upside down out of the building, I was like, this is interesting. And then it's all of a sudden about a little kid and his dragon and some racist farmers and some weird dragon fighting ring that I just, like, yeah, I don't care anymore.
Right, yeah.
What if when the writer sent off the PDF of the script to the artist, he accidentally took three pages of one other story and mixed them up? So when the artist got it, they were like, okay, whatever. I mean, that's what it says to draw. That's what I'm going to draw. And like, and no one up till now has caught it, that it's like two completely different stories.
That would be amazing.
That would be amazing.
That actually, you know, honestly, my favorite thing aside from the first few pages was, I don't even know if it was a favorite, but the little sneak preview of Camp Midnight at the back. I was like, no,
yeah,
this is kind of neat.
Great.
Like, this is kind of weird looking. I'm into this. I'm like, might just be because this Four Eyes thing was so disjointed and uninteresting that all of a sudden these bright, weird colors and these weird, wacky characters kind of make up for it. I don't know. I was not into this. I'm sorry. Okay.
I was going to say the name's a little weird, too. I mean, if, you know, Four Eyes, I thought was kind of, like, you know, it's a colloquial, like, nickname insult or whatever. And then when the dragon literally has three eyes, I was like, come on, that's like calling it like two wings or one tail or something. Like, you're just counting
his
body
lucky
parts.
Thin.
So I don't know. That was a tiny bit disappointing too. When he called the dragon Four Eyes because it had four eyes, I was like, oh, what? Come on, that's lazy as shit. Like, how attached can a kid be to a dragon that he's basically just like looked at like the one physical feature and called it that? I mean, it's, I don't know.
Not to mention,
calling a dog hairy.
Not to mention, yeah. All I kept thinking was, if we're going by official dragon lore here, can't these things breathe fire all over these perpetrators of violence on them? Like, these guys are, like, whipping these dragons, and couldn't they just turn around and go, ha!
Well, I won't go into the scientific theories of how fire breathing was actually proposed with dragons, if they ever did exist, but no, they couldn't.
All right.
Nailed it.
All right.
Unless you want me to go into the nerdy scientific theories.
If you can think of something tangible.
Well, they had glands in their body that produced helium. Which one is flammable? Helium or?
Hydrogen.
Hydrogen. That produced hydrogen, right? So that's what enabled these very large, very heavy creatures to fly, because that lightened their being, I guess. And what they would do is they would fly up and find deposits of, like, platinum up in the mountains or wherever, and they would grind their teeth on them to get metal then in their mouth. Then they would exhale this helium or hydrogen, whatever.
Okay, Tolkien.
And spark their teeth with the metal, which would then cause a spark, which would then cause a flame, but then they wouldn't be able to fly. You know, they would gradually not be able to fly anymore because they've used up all of the gas, and they would have to wait for that to be produced again. But theoretically, that's the whole idea behind them breathing fire for real. Nailed it.
Okay.
Learn something every day, kids.
I believe it.
Yeah, I watch stupid Discovery Channel specials on dragons, so shut up. All right. I think we pretty much mined all we will out of this, and I'm going to just go ahead and say, not reading the first arc, having no clue what's going on, the artwork is awesome. Based on that alone, I suppose I'll just give it a 5, just because that's right in the middle, and I've kind of lost, and I don't want to be a total dick here.
Yeah, I'm sure if you... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, exactly the same thing. Exact same thing I was going to say. So, ditto, I suppose.
I just feel I'm not in the target audience. I don't know who is, but it's not me. I can't fault it for that. This could be somebody's favorite comic on the shelves right now, and I don't want to say it's bad, because it's actually not bad. It's just not for me. So,
right.
I'm at a 5.
Nailed it.
All right.
Very uneventful number one for the week.
Yeah.
Started off good.
Yeah, it's to no one's fault, really. We didn't know that it, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to do the library thing with the first collection and check it out, and I'll report back.
All right, we want a book report by next week, then.
We'll see. Whenever they get it to me, but absolutely.
You're asking for a lot of free work here. I think you should just settle down with your beard and your cup of coffee over there and just...
All right, so who wants to talk about Marvel being a corporation?
I thought they were.
Well, I know, but it's like on the list here for...
Did you read the article? Clearly you didn't.
I've been quite busy this week, no.
Right.
Yes, no, I read it. It's...
Okay, then, yeah, you know. Essentially, the guy who's the CEO of Marvel Comics just donated a million dollars to Donald Trump's campaign. And the gist I got from this essay was, for all the people that want to stand by one of the big two companies and act like this, I'm a Marvel guy, I'm a DC guy, and will defend it with their, you know, livelihoods, seem to forget the fact that at the end of the day, these are just big giant companies trying to make big giant profits, and they don't care about your feelings, they don't care about being your friend, they don't care about your beliefs and your the things you love or anything else, and you know, it doesn't matter what the stories are about, there are people behind these characters and books and so on and so forth that, you know, have a different belief set and a different lifestyle than the rest of us. That was kind of what I got out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. The the idea of a CEO being like just a shitty human being is pretty much like the default for any like CEO of any corporation. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you hear about someone being awesome, like donating all this money to charity and, you know, donating their time and making things harder on themselves just to help other people, that makes huge news because it's like, you know, it's fucking like an albino rhinoceros or something. It just happens once in a lifetime. I mean, these people are generally, are from something I read a few years ago, people in these sort of position of power are generally sociopaths, and they just don't even have the capacity to give a shit about another human being. So, yeah, like, it's sometimes you need to be reminded, because I do like a lot of stuff Marvel's been doing, and I enjoy their movies, and I like some of the comics, and stuff's great, and I gotta remember that they're still a piece of shit corporation, like any of them, and I can still get a lot of enjoyment out of their stuff. I'm not gonna boycott them or anything, because although that's, you know, money is really the only thing that someone like that cares about, there's also no changing behavior of someone like that either. It's not going to happen. So I think being aware, but still, yeah, I don't know.
If you dig enough, you'll never be able to do anything, because everyone at the top of all of these companies is just the same.
Yeah.
I think there are some slight exceptions, but yeah. When you're talking about a company as big as Marvel, and this is not Marvel via Disney, this is the Marvel like brand independent of Disney, and the guy that runs the Marvel end of things. Because Marvel's been accused by certain types of people as being this far-left, crazy, communist, liberal comic book company that's pushing rabid left-wing agenda, and here's the guy at the top of the pyramid who is not only a crazy Republican, he's a crazy Donald Trump loving Republican. And that it kind of hit me last night, and I don't know why, but the idea that that guy could actually be running this country in a few months is now becoming too real to be laughed at anymore. Like, I'm actually getting nervous at the thought.
Yeah, it would be very terrible.
Yeah, like, it almost makes me go, oh, God, can we have George Bush back just for, like, 4 years just as a buffer? Because he was nuts, but at least he was funny. And he kind of had people that sort of have done this before kind of pulling his, you know, strings and telling him when to laugh and when to wave. I feel like this guy literally will, like, he'll be, like, the first thing he'll do is look for the ICBM and not only try to launch it, but maybe throw it himself.
Yeah, it's... Maybe he'll do the Dr. Strangelove thing and write it.
Yeah, exactly. I think
that would be the best case scenario.
It wouldn't, because every I don't know, I could go on this topic for hours and days, and I think pretty much any of us could. I just, you hear that and you're like, oh, I mean Marvel's not my favorite company in the world, but I do like them, and like you said, I love the movies, I do like the comics, and I do see the through line of thoughts and opinions that I kind of align with when I read some of their books from the writers and the creative people. But when you get above them, the money, the people that control the money are, you know, they're not like us.
No,
they never are.
They don't like us, and they don't care about us. But, you know, as long as their comics still sell, I mean, if you got good writers and good artists that, Obviously not everyone at Marvel shares this guy's opinion. I'm sure there's plenty of Marvel paychecks when a percentage of the money went to Bernie Sanders or,
you know,
Hillary Clinton or whatever too. So I mean, this guy's a figurehead in a way, but I don't think it doesn't seem to have much of a hand in the creative side of things. So I guess I don't know. I'm torn on this stuff. I don't want to punish the creators and the writers and the artists and stuff.
Because they are more in line with us,
presumably.
Right. Well, just by reading what's happening, a lot of the stories, just even stuff I've read on Marvel, it's like, yeah, these guys, like, you can tell in some of the stuff that they write about and some of the things that they say in their writing that they're totally not like that, you know?
Well, you got your occasional Chuck Dixons of the world that would disagree, but, yeah, more or less, I would think we would all be in the same general camp of belief with people who are the more creative types. It's just, when you think about it long term, you're like, every dollar I give to this company now, there's some guy, you know, filling his gold bathtub with my money and, you know, inviting Donald Trump and a bunch of strippers over with it. And that's a little upsetting because it's like, I don't make
me.
Yeah, I get up at 5 a.m. I work and I hate my job as much as any other normal person does. And, you know, comics are like one of the few things I do to forget the fact that I, you know, do similar work, making people buy a fourth airplane or whatever they do with their money. I don't know. While I drive a car that I could barely fit in an hour and a half each way. I essentially call it my cell phone on wheels, but, you know, I can listen to some decent podcasts and, you know, get a good cry in before I get home. I don't
Sounds
know.
Like a full day.
Yeah. I just
goes
like
home, he makes himself a latte and hangs out with his cats.
Pretty much. I don't know. It's just I feel like when I give my money to Image, I feel like maybe Robert Kirkman doesn't love Bernie Sanders as much as I do, but I think if we sat down and just talked general beliefs, we'd kind of line up at least 70% of the way.
Yeah, probably.
Just thinking out loud.
I would say Image is more into Downcast and Ebullition Records than Marvel is.
Yeah, I would. I don't know, this is the second similar story I've read in this vein, because the guy who owns, or he's the CEO of Diamond Distribution, he's a huge Obama conspiracy theorist and big Republican donor as well. And it's just like, what is everything that I love is run by the worst humans alive? Why? Even the ones that aren't that horrible are still,
because everyone's looking, just looks out for themselves.
I don't know. I think when you have $1 billion, you don't have to look out for a whole lot of anything. You have alligators, you know, patrolling your property. I think you're fine.
Yeah, but they want to hold on to that. They want to make sure that they don't, you know.
They're terrified all the time that there's someone that could come take that from them. And the only person they're really terrified of is a government of any kind that has the ability to actually do it. So as long as they're able to have enough power and basically buy and sell the politicians they want, they will feel safe.
Again, like, I am baffled by this whole fear of this. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, France, they did it. They went in and took the ruling parties down and cut their heads off and had a real revolution. And it really did. It actually happened. I mean, nowadays we think about these revolutions and it's like, yeah, whatever. Like, you know, I was quite political in my hardcore days. And I remember, like, seeing Los Crudos and just being like, yes, fuck yes, Martin. Like, I love that you talk for 7 minutes in between each 30-second song. This is awesome. Because I don't know if you guys ever saw Los Crudos, but that's exactly
we're
what
from
it.
Chicago. Yeah, dude, they're from here.
Oh, okay, right on.
Seen them a million times. Actually, yeah, I filmed them, and I'm pretty sure they're up on my YouTube page.
Oh, awesome. Yes.
Well, here's the
thing. I went and saw them when they played with Infest about a year and a half ago.
Oh, wow, they're doing Crudo shows again? Or was it just for that show?
It was just for this show.
No, I think they're actually playing again.
Oh, maybe.
Oh, nice. No, so is Limp Wrist from there, too?
No, yeah. Limp Wrist was guys from all over. Some of the guys... Oh. There was a band called... there was a band...
The band.
No, there was... Oh, Kill the Messenger.
Okay, yeah, I've heard of them.
One of the members from that band was in that... It was in Limp Wrist, and I want to say... Somebody from Kill Your Idols, maybe? I don't know. But I definitely know Kill the Messenger had at least one member of Limp Wrist. But I'm friends with Ebro, the drummer, on Facebook. And he posts when they're playing out once in a while. But Scott and I were, like, ridiculously obsessed with MKUltra when they were around. To the point where...
I played with them once.
At that Iowa thing?
Yeah, yeah. Rock
okay.
Rock
Hall. I lobbied with Kirk and Frank for, like, 2 solid years to... replace that. I was like, please let me play drums for your band. And then I'm like, Ebro's too busy with Crudos and Charles Bronson. I got time. And they're like, and I know like Frank was kind of like, oh, if Ebro's not into it, but they ended up not doing that. But Crudos and MKUltra played probably once a month together. And I think I saw every single awesome. One of those shows. So
that sounds great.
To me, when MKUltra ended, that's hardcore like died for me in a huge way because they were like my favorite band, period. They're so much fun to see live, and Bring Me the Head of Tony Victory might be my favorite song ever.
It's so awesome.
And the fact that Frank used to be friends with him and did not care if he was in the room or not when he would talk about the song made it so much more amazing because Frank was just a little sometimes, which was why he was so much fun to watch on stage.
That's great.
Way off topic.
Those guys are great.
They were pretty good. They were pretty much great, yes.
Right. Yeah. How did we get on that, actually? Talking about Revolution. Anyway, I was just saying that there was a point in my life where I really believed that that could happen, and then I got bitter and older and scared all the time, and I figured that would never happen again. But then we had Occupy, which had its pluses and minuses, but that was a pretty amazing group of people just coming together, although there was, like I said, some pretty big problems with it, but with the organization and the lack thereof.
Right.
But, you know, that kind of stuff, I think, Occupy, like, I'm not going to say inspired Donald Trump to run, but I think the kind of fear that, like, the super wealthy have of actually losing their stuff comes from stuff like Obama's strong showings, 2 elections in a row, Occupy movement, things like other things that are considered kind of like left-wing tent poles, like gay marriage and legalization of marijuana. Like, these things are kind of just happening all over, and they're sort of happening. I mean, gay marriage obviously happened because of the Supreme Court. Just like, you know, segregation got turned over by the Supreme Court back in the 60s. And, you know, those things, like, that scares people too, so now they want to make sure they can, like, you know, front-load the judicial system as much as they can. So there's just, I don't know, I guess I'm saying is they're probably running a little more scared than we think they should be because they still have all the power and they have all the money.
But. And never understood, like, they all have this hatred of Obama, yet under Obama they have never been richer. So
yeah,
what is your problem with the guy? He was supposed to be for the people and he did everything he can to make your pockets fatter. Like, I don't understand. I really don't. But that's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah. I think it's honestly was just to drive the right to continue to, you know, vote in every primary, every, you know, midterm election, all those things. Like, it was almost like it's like Obama's just existence was promotion for the Republican Party. Cause yeah, my sister's just like, he's just such a piece of shit, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, really? Like, why? Like, what's, and, you know, my brother, same kind of thing, will be like, you know, he's just taking my rights away every day. I go, name me one right you had. and first of all, define right, and then, because I know you can't, and then describe which one it was you had, you know, in 2007, and that you no longer have now. What's the one? Like, tell me. And you can, of course.
My favorite one was the whole, he's trying to take my guns. Yet since he's been in office, the laws have gotten less and less, like, I mean, people can basically walk into, like, a Walgreens, like, yeah, let me get a fucking... Let me get some eggs, milk, and a Glock. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's ridiculous. Like, anything that they try to argue is, like, completely false. And it's like, what are you... Stop watching Fox. Will you please stop watching Fox? They make everything up.
Straw man.
The thing that's interesting is that Fox is so anti-Trump, which makes this donation thing even more curious to me, because it feels like the ultimate Hail Mary in a way. Like, this, we're throwing it all in this one time, and I feel like if this fails, it's actually going to be good, but then maybe they'll dig up, I don't know, Bruce Willis the next time. I have no idea. I'm just like, and if, I think of old, angry old people who, like, can't come to grips with themselves being racist, and, like, 18-year-old guys who didn't get a football scholarship, who still got a pickup truck, are going to come together and make this guy a viable option. And that's so... It was funny like 6 months ago, but now I'm like, oh my God, this is actually happening. And now I feel like Captain America's behind it.
What? Oh.
God. Bringing it back to the Marvel thing.
Right.
Yeah, what would Captain America say?
I think he'd probably just throw the shield in the ocean, just start crying, and then open a body shop or something.
He would go into the garage for like an hour or two and come out with a maple leaf on the shield and be like, I am Captain Canada.
I am renouncing my American.
I am Lieutenant Canada.
Captain Canuck.
Yeah, that too.
I love it.
So.
All right.
That was awesome.
I enjoyed it. I like to mix it up a bit here and there. Can't always be about comics.
No, I agree. But now here's the main question. And, like, do we want to continue with the couple of other topics we have, or do we just want to let you three nerds argue about music for the rest of the show?
Oh, what do you think that you're trying to tell me you don't own one Discord release, you lying sack of shit?
Here's the best part about this over-under for me is I literally am familiar with two bands on Discord, so
God,
I
like
only
you
have
never
one
been
choice.
To, like, a hardcore show.
I actually put it down as actual releases.
Yes.
Not actual bands. But, like, you could have picked the same band, two different records, but it's, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
Whatever. That's fine.
So I literally have one choice, and it's going to either spot. So it was super simple for me to do this one.
Okay.
Q and not you.
Never heard of
it. Sounds like we're doing it.
All right. We're doing it. Overrated, underrated, Discord records releases. Overrated for me, Minor Threat. Now, let me clarify before anyone gets all fucking mad. Okay, I think that they are really good. But I also feel like, well, after they stopped doing what they do, and, like, the new generation of people came into punk rock and hardcore, they were, like, the almost fashion statement band that everybody was like, they're the fucking best. And it was like, all right, you guys are all ruining this now.
I don't entirely disagree. I always kind of felt like
you either liked
Minor Threat.
Do that either.
I always felt like, at least in certain circles, and ours was one of them, mm-hmm. you either liked Minor Threat or you were absolutely wrong and you should go home and never come
around. I've never met anybody that doesn't like him. But I do remember a bunch of people who, like, I probably saw at the mall in an IOU sweater 2 weeks ago. Now they're wearing, like, the jeans and the shirt, and they're like, out of step, dude. I'm like, yeah, go home.
Minor Threat wasn't even the first thing I heard that got me into hardcore.
What?
They were actually...
that's the point I'm making. Back then, that's what someone would have said. Like, dude, really?
It was just like back when, like, people used, like, a Snapcase show as a reason to show off their newest, like, clothes. Like, it turned into a fashion show. Like, that's how I feel Minor Threat became after a while. Was just...
Oh, it's not their fault.
No, I'm not saying it's their fault, but overrated.
I bet Ian McKay would probably agree with you.
Right? See? I know stuff.
Yeah. Arnie McKay, how do you say his name?
Yeah.
I think it's just changes every day.
You could buy Minor Threat t-shirts at Spencer's Gifts in the early 90s, I remember.
Yeah, now you can buy dildos, so yay Spencer's. Because that's all 14-year-olds
taste
need
the
now,
rainbow.
Right?
You can buy Minor Threat dildos.
Yeah, right?
All right, mine may upset some people.
If you pick my overrated, I'm going to stab you.
This one... All right, I'll just say it. The Embrace LP.
Damn it, you dick! You dick!
See, I thought
You're
I was going...
dick.
I thought I was at least going medium depth with this one. The reason I picked... And I knew somebody else would pick Minor Threat. I didn't know who, but I knew somebody else would. And I still kind of have a fondness for Minor Threat.
I'm not saying they're bad.
I admit that I was late to the game on the Embrace LP, but I heard Endpoint's cover of Failure, and I was like, oh my god, I love this song. I gotta find that record. I found the record, and the only song on it that I like is Failure. The rest of that album is terrible. I never finished the entire record in one sitting, because I'd be like, oh my god, this is so bad. Why do people love this so much? So... Again, I know there are some people that I used to know or would maybe know that would go, you know, put this.
Yeah, pretty much everyone from the North Shore.
Yeah, put this, Ben, put this thing over your eyes and stand against that pole. We're going to pretty much end you right here. Sorry, I really just never liked that album.
No, it's not good. It's
well,
not
you know,
good.
Well, you know what I was part of.
Yeah, Land of Greed, World of Need.
The Homeless Benefit compilation that covers the entire Embrace LP.
Because I picked the Embrace LP as my pick. Damon goes, yeah, well, you know we were on that camp. And I'm like, oh, yeah, shit, dude, you were.
Yeah, I mean, not that that would change anything. I did not love that record when it came out either. I thought it was... You know, I'd heard Minor Threat before I heard Fugazi, and I heard Fugazi, and I thought they're great. And then I go, you know, then maybe I found like the Skewball Union 7-inch or something like that. I found other Ian McKay projects because I really dug his stuff. Embrace is the last things I actually got. I didn't even know that was one of his things, and I just did not like it. I thought it was kind of soft, and I don't know. It just didn't really do anything for me. We got asked to be on that comp. We were like, okay, you know, we'll do our best to make this song as good as we can, and we completely changed it. Not saying like we improved on it, but it just didn't directly translate to our style of music whatsoever. Like,
not to say that, you know, we did it any better, but we totally killed it.
Well, I will say I definitely like it better than we did it.
Well, that was—I
mean, I liked a bit of that comp, even though I'm not a huge fan of Embrace. I like essentially almost everyone's version of the Embrace songs better than I like Embrace's version.
Well, I remember, like, I was actually living with Jim at the time, and when that record came out, we were, like, both, like, this lineup is so good, and this album is so terrible. And we were both like, eh, we'll just buy it just to support the cause that they're, you know, all involved
support
in.
Support the cause.
It was a benefit for, like, homeless people or for hungry children or something like that. And we're like, yeah, the cause is great. That the lineup is great. That album is terrible. And I was just like, okay, so... we both agree, then I'm not the only one. He's like, oh, God, that record's horrible. I was like, thank you. Oh, my God, I thought I was the only person on planet Earth that hated it. I actually don't remember a single thing about that record because I don't actually think I ever bought it, but I remember listening to it once or twice, and I think my thought was all these versions are better, but it's still Embrace. It'd be like if they said, oh, we're going to cover Earth, Wind, and Fire. Do your best. So it was nothing like the bands were all because I'm like again the lineup I was like this lineup's pretty much pristine.
Yeah, I mean Rancid being on it at that time was like the height of Rancid's popularity too. It was really crazy for them to be on this comp with Lifetime and Ashes and Sparkmarker and Outspoken and stuff. It was really strange.
I don't remember Rancid being on there, but that was the height of their popularity too.
I never did understand why they were popular.
Yeah, that
Rancid. Oh, I don't know. That's still... another band, man. Like, I loved Operation Ivy. I did not understand the appeal of Rancid, though.
Right? I think people just liked them because it used to be Operation Ivy, and they didn't want to like admit that they didn't like it.
Yeah, but it's like the closest thing they're going to get to another Operation Ivy record. But if that was the case, man, Operation Ivy would have. I mean, you know, sometimes bands stay around so long that they become terrible to the point where even their old catalog that you really liked, you can't listen to anymore.
Yeah.
Had Operation Ivy become Rancid, that would have been what happened. But luckily, there was that buffer of them not being the same band. So Operation Ivy is still pretty good.
Well, I can ruin that for you if you'd like.
Do it.
I saw a video on the interwebs about a Operation Ivy reunion that was played in some shitty record store in front of like 50 kids. And I'm talking like, you know, 16 and 17 year olds. And these dudes are like 50 years old on stage playing Operation Ivy songs. And it just ruined everything about that band for me.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, I watched it like, you know, it was like, this is like 2 months ago, if that. And I'm like, this is the worst. These kids are the worst. They don't know anything about Operation Ivy.
There you go. That's that sounds awful.
I might be fucking the only one dicks. That... All right, settle down there.
That and all like the super uber racist jocks I went to high school with, all of a sudden by senior year, they were like done playing football and they all were like, Operation Ivy's the best, man. Like, dude, you need to go away. Sorry.
I first heard about them because of this. Matt Hensley's little thing in one of H3 videos.
Yeah, that's how I heard of them too.
I was like, what is that band? Yeah. And you had to like look, you know, there's no internet, so you had to like look through the credits of the, you know, the fifth generation VHS copy of that tape you had.
That's so awesome. That's totally how I got like my first 3 years of records.
Yeah.
Maybe even more than that. Probably first 5 years of records.
Yeah, by putting a boombox up to the TV while your skate video plays. We've all done it. Don't laugh.
Oh, no. Yeah, that and reading the thank you list on records.
Yeah.
Everyone bought a fucking Warzone record because of those goddamn Revelation thank you lists.
Yep. Don't forget the struggle. Don't forget
I don't know if you guys like Warzone, but that was just my example. Like,
I like a song by Warzone.
I pretended to like Warzone for like a year and a half till I realized they're just not very good.
Yeah, I like that Rabies existed. That's about it.
I think I liked them till I saw them live, and then I was just like, oh, weird. I don't like this.
Wait, I'm gonna pick an overrated. I have a backup since you took my Embrace.
I would never turn your Embrace away.
Ew.
Wig Out at Denko's.
You did not just say that out loud in front of me.
Yes, I did, and I'm going to tell you why.
I don't even want to hear why.
I'll tell you why. I have a very good reason.
There is nothing that band ever did that's not at least sort of good, but fine, go ahead.
Because Dave Smalley is not on it.
Yeah, you have nothing. You have
no,
nothing.
I do. I have plenty.
I like Field Day and Four on the Floor.
Dave Smalley is dag nasty. Not Sean Brown. Not whoever that tool was on there.
Wasn't that Peter something?
Yeah, Peter whatever. Yeah, you're right. It's
good old Peter something or other.
I don't remember.
Peter Frampton. Peter Frampton would have been better.
Anyone else want to defend Wig Out of Danko's with me, please?
Oh, it's great. Well, I've talked about it on Skype with Chris. I was just like, well, I pretty much like everything Dag Nasty did, but
thank you.
I certainly do like the Smalley stuff the best.
Oh yeah, I don't disagree, but I mean, like, even Four on the Floor, as much as that is essentially the last Bullet Boys album, it's still pretty good.
Well, yeah, I mean, Dave Smalley's on it though.
I don't know, it's their most radio rock friendly album, and
right.
It's still
right.
Really good. And it's a record I was readily available when it came out, and I was always like, yeah, I heard it's not that good. And now I've listened to it on Spotify a million times, and I'm like, why didn't I just buy it? See, this is why you can't listen to certain people with their opinions, because that's a pretty good record. If I ever find it, I'm going to get it.
I have it on CD.
Oh, my God.
Pete Kortner, by the way, that was his name. I had
yes.
to look it up.
Thank you. No, you're wrong. We Got a Danko's is not overrated at all.
I want to listen to that one with Sean Brown again too. It's been a while since I heard that, because I loved Swizz. I thought they
were
great.
I like Swizz. But when I think of Dag Nasty, I think of Dave Smalley.
I don't not think of Dave Smalley. I just don't think that band ever did anything bad.
I don't know. For me, it's
like, I don't even know you anymore. That's how much your comment like just shocks me to death.
No way, because I put Can I Say on such a pedestal that Wig Out Denko's is like, pfft.
Wow.
Whatever.
I'm having a rough day right now.
Yeah. Maybe I'll go to my overrated just to
can I say is a masterpiece triumph?
It is
for that band.
It is. In general.
Yeah.
For music.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you. Can't. You'll never ever hear me say one bad thing about that record.
We need all the listeners to go on Spotify and compare.
I love Can I Say. Can I Say is... If I could make love to it, I would.
Don't try and make up for this now. It's too late.
I'm not trying to make up for nothing. I don't like Wig Out of Dinkles. I'm sorry. How could you say you like that if you hear Can I Say first?
I could say I love them both equally. And I heard Wig Out of Dinkles
first.
It's
not bad, but I don't... Sorry, sticking with my guns.
Mark this day on the calendar. Okay, I'll go with mine.
Brian's all distraught now.
Well, going with overrated, underrated is sometimes hard because I can't necessarily go with something because I just don't like it. Like, it has to actually be kind of, in my mind, overrated.
Well, yeah,
so.
You're right. Look, I know there's a lot of people that do like Wig Out at Danko's.
Hey, Chris?
Yeah.
Damien was talking.
It's okay. I'm glad that inspired a little part. I've thoroughly enjoyed the last 4 or 5 minutes. No, but I was going to say this. So my choice is a record that I enjoy, not as much as I enjoy any of their other records, but I'm going to say Fugazi's Red Medicine is a record that I think, in my mind, is a little overrated. For a lot of people I know, it was their first exposure to Fugazi. There was a lot of stuff going on with Fugazi around that time. They were touring a lot, larger shows, bigger deal. And I don't know. It never really did it for me.
I'm gonna tell you right now. That's another like stake into Brian's heart, probably right now.
They're fantastic. I loved everything. When I first heard "Waiting Room," I had no idea what Fugazi sounded like. My friend just like gave me this tape. He goes, "Dude, check out this tape. It's got a guy who has someone just all over his face. It's awesome." I was like, "All right, cool. I'll check it out." And put that on. Right, that's on Margin Walker. Anyway, but when I first heard those songs, I was just like, this is brand new to me. Like, that's the guy from Minor Threat. Are you kidding me? That sounds awesome. And I loved it, but that Red Medicine was the one record that I just kind of, that's, I think, where I sort of maybe just kind of lost interest. I saw Fugazi like 6 times in one summer out here. They played Olympia and a few shows in Seattle, some on the east side of Seattle. Like, it was just such a great summer. And then I think it was the next summer, Red Medicine came out, and I just was like, yeah, this really isn't for me anymore. It feels like now it's kind of more for like the Lollapalooza kids. Like, now they can like Fugazi, and that's cool. But yeah, so that was my overrated.
There was 2 albums aside from the first one. There was Red Medicine, and then was it End Hits?
Mm-hmm. No.
That one came after Red Medicine, correct?
I believe so.
Yes.
I have since listened to that record as well, but it took me a while to come back to that. And I listened to Red Medicine just a few days ago because I was trying to think of... I actually was just listening to Fugazi randomly, and I was like, what does that record sound like?
Came out, yeah, after Red Medicine.
I probably would have agreed with the Red Medicine when it came out because I think it was bumming me out that they were playing. Like, people that I went to high school with, I'm like, "You what? I got made fun of for liking them for 4 years, and now you're going to see them? All right." I think I was a little... Plus, I was more into, like, at that time, the, you know... Dead Guy and whatever.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I mean, that was 95. That was the year all that stuff came
out. Yeah, it was, Brian, because I was in the same boat with you. That was like 97, 90, yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah, I admittedly went through a 3 to 4 year period where Fugazi wasn't really on my radar anymore. But mm-hmm. End Hits kind of brought me back. And like now they're like full blown. Like every time I listen to them, I have like thoughts of nostalgia ranging from skateboarding through hardcore through weird relationships, all kinds of stuff. So I pretty much, that's not my favorite record, so I'm not gonna argue with it.
They did so many records. They did a lot after that too that I forget about, but The Argument and
that
documentary.
Good.
Yeah, so I'm definitely going to revisit all of them again, but just everything from the Margin Walker 13 songs thing, that whole, that I guess Margin Walker, and then there was like an EP I think that made the 13 songs.
Yeah.
And then there's Repeater, City Die Nothing, and On the Kill Taker. I mean, all of those, like, for me, just like ramped up in,
I think that
EP
is with Repeater, isn't it? Repeater plus three songs. I don't know. Well, I think the CD, like, yeah, the CD was like Repeater plus three songs or some shit like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first CD was actually the self-titled and Margin Walker, then Repeater plus three songs, then Steady Diet, In on the Kill Taker, Red Medicine, End Hits, and then so on. And I think that was pretty much it.
Instruments, like, or instrumental, yeah, or whatever. Yeah. That was a weird one, but... anywho, since we're talking about Fugazi, I'm going to go underrated End Hits, because when that record came out, I bought it and listened to it so much, I think I just put it away last week. That record, to me, was awesome.
I will second that. Not that it's my pick. However, we saw them two nights in a row at the Congress Theater for that album. Not only was Fugazi incredible both nights, but, oh my God, Shellac opened up both shows and were equally as good.
Yup.
Oh, that sounds perfect.
So it was like, the first night we went in, I was like, dude, it was some weird band. I don't remember. Blonde Redhead, does that sound
don't
right?
Don't even ask me. I have no clue.
Some weird, Blonde Redhead was a popular band for like
10 years
ago. I have no idea. Some weird band.
Good records.
Was it?
Oh, no, I just said they had two good records.
But yeah, this some band opened up. I don't remember who they were. And I remember going, oh my God, this Shellac band's going to be horrible. And they came out and they opened up with Fight Song, I believe, off of Thousand Hits.
Thousand Hertz. Mm-hmm.
Thousand Hertz. The very last song, the one, hey man, I want to have a fight. And I was like, who is this band? They're the greatest thing I've ever heard. Plus, Steve Albini had his guitar strapped to his belt. So he didn't have a guitar strap. He just had it locked into a like a belt buckle, which I thought was amazing. And the drummer just went off in this crazy solo where he didn't use the toms, I don't think, at all. He just kept alternating between the hi-hat and the snare, like, with his... It was hard to describe. It was really weird, but I remember loving it.
Yeah.
Thinking, this guy's... Plus, the drums were right at the very front of the stage, so, like, everybody was, like, next to each other. It was really bizarre, but I loved it. So...
I agree.
That was those two shows.
That might be part of the reason why that album was so awesome for me. Because the first time I really heard it, it was probably then.
They definitely wore that album out both nights. Totally worth it.
Yeah.
I actually saw them three times.
Which started my love of Shellac as well.
Oh, yeah, I was instantly... The second I saw Shellac the first night, I'm like, I love this band. I'm going to buy everything tomorrow.
Yeah, most people won't know what I'm talking about, but I believe after that, I went straight to the next day, Red Tower, which was a record store here in Orland, where I bought the vinyl of 1000 Hertz that came with the CD. Nailed it.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. I remember you'd do that.
All right.
They're great.
They are great. Did you ever see them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen them as often as I can. I missed them the last time they came through here. But every time Shellac comes through Seattle, I do my best to go see them. I missed them, I think, twice to my knowledge. And the first time I missed them was right after Terraformer came out. And they played that, they started their set with that, like, 20-minute one-riff song. It's so good.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the very first song of that album.
See, now, here's how lame I am, and I don't know if I'm going to include Brian in this or not, but it was either last summer or the summer before, they were playing a free show in a park in Chicago, and I did not go.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Duh. But I did email them back and forth, which is why they are the intro and outro for our podcast, because they gave me the go-ahead to use any song that I want.
That's
nailed it.
Cool.
Please stop saying nailed it.
I can't help it.
All right.
It's kind of my thing.
I've noticed.
You got jammed.
You got jammed.
All right. Mine's probably not technically underrated, but it's underrated to me. Steady Diet of Nothing by Fugazi. To me, I don't know why anyone's laughing. To me, that is the album that I... Because I remember in high school, everybody loved the first EP. Everybody loved Repeater. Nobody really had to seem to have much of an opinion on Margin Walker or the EP, and everybody kind of said that, I don't know where they got this, that Steady Diet of Nothing sounded too much like reggae.
Really?
I have no idea, but a lot of people I used to skate with were like, that album's terrible. How can you like that thing? So I remember going all through high school being like the... I felt like I was the only person in my entire high school of 1,800 people that liked that record. And to me, it was instant... I loved it instantly. I thought it was the best thing they ever did.
Yeah, it's great. That just that guitar at the beginning is like... It's like big, giant... strumming guitar.
How's that go?
It's just awesome.
I love...
Wait, that might be the wrong note. Maybe a little longer.
It's just got such great emotion to it, even when there's no vocals going on. And, I mean, I feel that with a lot of their records, but that one especially. There's that one instrumental on the... That's the last song on Side A. That's right, I said Side A.
Nice.
That's probably my favorite song... One of my favorite songs they ever wrote. I've bought the record 3 times now. That's how much I love it.
That's awesome.
Really?
I bought it on cassette.
He keeps breaking it because he gets so emotional listening to it.
No, I bought it on cassette.
I thought he was going to say Egg Hunt was his underrated.
I don't think I've ever heard that.
I've never heard it.
All right, well, you...
Maybe Lungfish. Maybe that would have been your...
Is that your underrated, Lungfish?
No, Lungfish is not my underrated.
How about Fire Party?
How about Nation of Ulysses?
Yeah, I like Nation of Ulysses.
Crown Hate Ruin. Were they on Discord?
Crown of Thorns? I don't think so.
Crown Hate Ruin, you nerd. Yeah, they were.
They might have been, I don't remember.
Yeah. For the sake of this segment, I guess we'll say they were.
No, they were. They were. So I guess I couldn't say Can I Say is my underrated, because I guess technically that record really wasn't underrated.
You could say whatever you want.
I guess I couldn't say... If I had to pick one...
I thought you did.
Blue...
I mean, I did, but I mean, I want to pick one for real this time.
Blue Tip, Discord, number 111.
Nerd.
I don't recall hearing that in 20 years.
I like that record a lot.
It's been 20 years since I've heard that record. I couldn't tell you what it sounded like if I heard it right now.
It sounds just like Blue Tip.
Please don't play it over your phone either.
I'm not.
Yeah, they were cool. The guitar player from Undertow fucking loved Blue Tip so much. He loved Jason Farrell. Like anything that guy did, like... Mark has actual... He has Swizz's logo tattooed on his ankle. Like... He is so into that guy and that stuff, and as I guess vicariously, I got a lot of his enthusiasm, like just by being near him from Blue Tip. So I enjoyed them quite a bit. But I'll tell you, since I went and saw them in Seattle, and I was excited to see him, and I'd never heard of this band at the drive-in, but they opened for Blue Tip, and they are not my favorite band, and I don't think those records have aged very well. But seeing them live for the very first time was a brand new experience. And it basically made me forget about the Blue Tip's entire set. Because Blue Tip, they're good. They played real well, kind of stood there and sang a song. And that to drive in, like, went fucking bananas. Like,
I want to say their last one, I think, held up pretty well. Relationship on Command or Rough
Command. Yeah, I like that record.
That one I still listen to a lot. The other ones, yeah, that's very rare that I'll pull those out.
Yeah, I like that his voice kind of sounds like if Cher was in a hardcore band. and I mean that. Like, I picture that sometimes. I think about it. I was like, this would be so rad if Cher had done a record like this. But I like it. I mean, I didn't dislike it for sure. I listened to a few months ago. I was like, I'm going to put one of those records. I think I put In Casino out on. And I was like, it's okay. It's good. It didn't blow me away like they did when I saw those songs live for the first time. Because, like I said, their live set, I don't know if you guys ever got to see them live, but it was crazy. They were bonkers.
Well, we saw Mars Volta a few times.
Yeah, I never did see Mars Volta.
I know, I'm sure, at the drive-in played Fireside, I just never went.
They did.
They also played Lollapalooza last year.
Were they like a band again?
No.
Yep.
That's right, they have a new record
coming
out.
They have a new record coming out, and... Apparently they're playing Chicago, and they're actually touring the country, and they're selling out everywhere, so.
Crazy.
Yeah, I still prefer if they just stuck with the Mars Volta, but whatever.
And I have, like, an honorable mention,
too.
Oh, my
God.
Hoover's Lurid Traversal of Route 7.
Yeah, great record. Listen to it last week.
I like that record a lot, too.
Yeah, Hoover, great. The best thing Hoover ever did is that Hoover-Lincoln split. Have you guys ever heard that?
Yes.
Yes.
That thing is so rad.
I don't know, I kind of liked Oric.
Stop. Oric. Vacuum cleaner?
You're a dong.
They did that split with Cadillac. Pow!
Can I do an honorable mention of the current Coliseum album, even though it wasn't on Discord? They sounded like Fugazi. Plus, they were, like, amazing.
I knew you like Current.
I love
You've liked Current since day one.
Yes, I did. Still do.
Yeah, they were great.
So, any other music stuff here, or are we done nerding out?
No. I'll do my overrated.
Oh,
underrated.
My underrated. My bad. Sorry, yes. My underrated, I don't think many people heard this record, and I will admit the entire record all the way through is a little hard to listen to because it's gets kind of crazy, but the Faraquet record, the band, I think it's spelled Faraquet. It's the first two songs on that record are so good and super weird and complicated, and I think being a musician who likes to play like...
Yeah, I think you truly do have an underrated pick.
Yeah. Being a musician who loves to play like weird, like fucked up time signatures and just really enjoys like that sort of playing, that was a very challenging record for me because I don't know how they wrote those songs. Like, they're super weird, very mathy and strange. But like I said, after the third song or so, I will say that it kind of wears me out a little bit. Like, I think it's a record that's definitely taken better in spurts. So I definitely think the record is not without its problems. But those first three songs are great, and everyone I've talked to has not heard it before. So
is it more recent or?
It's like from 2000, right?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe a little later than that, but
are
not
you
much.
Referring to the view from this tower?
Yes.
And I'm looking this up because I don't know who they were. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I just did 2000. You're right.
Oh, and I also want to throw in an honorable mention for overrated Q and Not You.
That's Ian and I can't remember her name. Right.
I don't know who was in Q and Not You.
I'm sorry, that's not. No, what is that? I'm thinking of something else.
Do you want to throw an honorable mention on Overrated from like 2 weeks ago or anything like that?
Well, I was going to say there's probably only like three more releases on Discord, so you might as well throw them into something. Mid-rated? You want to start?
No.
Half of the State of the Union compilation.
All right. There is that. Best thing ever for the week. I actually usually, for the last few weeks, I've been struggling to come up with something. This week was going to be similar, but right before we started recording, I finished watching Bill Burr's You People Are All the Same, and yeah, that thing is still totally hilarious, and that's my best thing ever for the week.
Oh, I gotta watch that.
You still haven't seen it? Dude, it's like 4 years old.
I have not, no. I like Bill Burr, too, but I just haven't seen it.
People got lives, man. Well, gotta give them some space.
Just saying. No, yeah,
it's going on the list.
It's definitely I've seen it a million times, and it still makes me just cry every time.
I agree. I love Bill Burr. Uneventful week, so I'll just throw out there that I was defriended on Facebook for a comment I made about the movie American Sniper.
Wow.
I just found
it.
Just some dude I went to grade school with, but...
Good.
Nobody I care about, but, like, when I made... I don't know why sometimes I... feel like I need to say this even though I know I'm going to get somebody mad because it happens every so often, and it did. Sorry, I don't really want to watch a movie about a dude who snipes people for a living.
Well, he's not even alive anymore. He's
no,
dead.
I know. I don't want to rant. I'll just say that I was never remotely interested. Still am not. Never will be. The lady who cut my hair gave me like a 5-minute rant in my face about how it's the greatest movie ever. And I was just like, the whole time she was talking, I just wanted to go outside and bang my head against something. So I just felt the need to express that like, hey, if you like that movie, sorry, I don't share your enthusiasm. I'm going to go stick my head in a toilet and just flush for like a half hour. So I knew somebody would be like, you, whatever, but yeah, sorry. That's all I get. This was a really lame week. Sorry.
Right on. I'm gonna have to say being made aware of Lock and Key.
Oh, nice! I'm on board with that.
Still kind of bummed that, but I guess better late than never. So.
Yeah, you really can't go wrong with that. I'm kind of excited to hear your thoughts when you finally catch up.
Oh, I will catch up because as soon as I get it, I plan on reading the whole thing, like pretty much in a sitting.
I will. When my Lovecraft moratorium's over, I will. Check it. I still got a couple more weeks.
Now, do you remember anything, Scott, Brian, from the first issue of Lock and Key?
Sort of. Yeah. Why?
Okay, so I'm gonna take it that the mother was assaulted, right?
Oh, I don't remember that much.
Should I be listening to this?
She buries a hatchet in that dude's head. You remember that part?
It's been a while.
I read it like 5 years ago. I don't remember that much intimate detail.
Never mind then.
Now I'm going to have to go back.
It like happens right away in the first issue.
That's probably why I liked it so much.
Filthy.
Yep. My mine before we go, my best thing will be I finished Alex and A today.
Ooh.
It was really great. Yeah.
Nice.
Oh yeah, now we can all Brian, you finished it, right?
No. You can talk, it's
super
fine.
Good.
Okay, well without getting into too much detail about the way it ended, don't you feel like it should have ended a little differently? Like it felt
maybe,
a little like
yeah.
weird, didn't it?
It did feel weird, but I think it was there was a lot of the writer had a lot of choices before him, and I don't think it was a wrong one. It was just you could definitely have seen it have gone in other directions, but I was fine with it. It's one.
Yeah,
of those,
I was
like,
actually fine with the ending too. At least he, you know.
Well, yeah, I thought it was good. It wasn't expected. Certainly, the way the last like quarter of that, or maybe last two thirds or whatever that last trade was, the way it went.
Right.
I did not expect it to go that way, and I thought it was pretty interesting. So
it's probably cool. Why they did it.
Especially when he finds out who threw him under the bus.
Yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, that was really good. And I also really have been into Sweet Tooth this week, so I'm catching up on Sweet Tooth. But
I won't say nothing about that either.
All right, those are my those are two things. Alex Nada loved it. Sweet Tooth, I'm enjoying it.
Where are you at right now with Sweet Tooth?
Like maybe the third trade. So it's still I know there's a lot coming up.
Oh yeah.
Well, I have the first trade. I haven't read it yet because I'm terrible at reading sometimes. So, but yeah, that's on the short list.
Those first couple of issues of Sweet Tooth are really good.
Yeah, I love
the art. The whole thing is good, but I mean, if you wanted to draw an audience in, I would say his first five issues were really strong at pulling people in. At least I thought so.
Well, alrighty then.
Awesome. Yes.
What did you ever? You read Trillium, right, Damien?
Yeah.
Did you? How did you? Do you like that better so far?
I think I liked Trillium quite a bit, but I definitely think I liked Sweet Tooth a little better.
Yes.
Okay.
It's going to be the never-ending rivalry of these
Take
two.
Take that, Brian.
It's a one-sided rivalry. It's fine.
It's like going outside and like having a rivalry with the birds. Like, yeah.
Until the birds overtake one day.
I know it doesn't That's matter, true. But
it's
whatever.
Him cheerleading and cartwheeling while I'm like staring at something off into space. Like, all right. America?
Shut up.
You win, I guess? I don't know.
I didn't say I won. I'm just saying.
Chris, just say nailed it and we'll move on.
You can win.
No, I'm not going to say nailed it.
You just did. Dork.
Nail you.
Ew. What? All right. On that note, this will be over. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XHorseAndX. Brian, you can find at Pure Rock Fury. Chris, you can find at SkateXEdge. Damien, you can find at Damien Johnston. You can find the show at The Comic Roast. Or go to comicroast.com to listen to everything we've ever done in our face lives.
Oh, I was going to say, also, nice job slipping Sensefield in last week. That was unexpected.
Right?
Yeah.
See, we've talked about it, and now I finally did it. Because I had a reason to, so just wait till I put Fugazi at the end of this.
No argument from me.
All right, then.
Well, Peter.
Don't sue us. We'll see you next week.
We take apart everything we build. Had it right here, now it's gone.